Rocking All Over Fens, a regular radio programme on National Roaming Radio, produced by gypsies and travellers living in the Cambridgeshire Fens.
And we're your presenters, Geraldine Cunningham and Nathan White.
Now for your news update with Diddler.
Earlier this week, police raided gypsy sites across the east of England as part of Operation Arctic, targeting criminals involving ram-raiding rural post offices. Five men have been arrested as part of the operation. Later in the programme, we ask if the operation has been a disaster for community relations as traveller sites are portrayed as criminal ghettos in the media. This week, councillors in the Cotswold town of Stow-on-Wold are debating whether to enforce an injunction on the ancient gypsy horse fair in town. The fair has been going for hundreds of years and is the largest event of its kind in southern England. The Gypsy Council have condemned the attempt to ban the fair as a racist attempt to erase an ancient part of British culture. Later this month, the Office of Deputy Prime Minister will be issuing a new planning circular, which will hopefully force local councils to identify land that travellers can buy for their own sites. The new circular is likely to cause controversy and is part of the government's new attempt, through its new Gypsy and Traveller Unit, to resolve the often heated conflicts over Gypsy sites. Now for the Gypsy Press. In Travellers Times, issue 24, summer 2005. In this issue, a gypsy writes an open letter to the Sun editor, while Nottinghamshire probation officer and gypsy Anne Emsley explains why Radio 2 scares her. In the wake of the VE celebrations, remember the forgotten war heroes, and in glorious colour feature all the fashions of the fair at Stow. Also, as Traveller Times launches its Safer Sites campaign, gypsy journalist Jake Bowers talks to travellers trying to defend their civil liberties. And as the actor Corin Redgrave recovers after speaking out after another traveller eviction, comedian Boothby Graffo admits his gypsy joke wasn't funny. Now for events happening in your area. From the 12th to the 23rd of September at the Castle in Wisbeach is the Something From Nothing project. This features reminiscence of traveller and gypsy culture and way of life from days gone by. Also, starting on the 3rd of October, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, for 15 weeks of free driver theory, basic skills and beginners IT training at Parsons Drove Community Centre near Wisbeach. Limited places are available. Please contact CRED's Traveller Team on 01 223 508 700 for more details. Later in the show, raids on local sites following the recent events that took place in Wisbeach. We'll discuss the subject with local residents to find out what their views and thoughts are on the subject and interview the man in charge, George Barr. We also ask, what exactly do gypsies and travellers contribute to our society? And look at the Cambridgeshire Team for Travel Education's new racist bullying CD. We also got gypsy poetry and music from different generations, with music by Jolene Cunningham and some poetry from Romany poet Kathleen Cunningham. Finally, as Black History Month approaches, we ask why gypsies' history is often overlooked in museums. Meet Romany Museum founder Frank Brazil.
The Gabbers, love them or hate them. See what you think after this.
Born in the middle of the afternoon in a horse-drawn carriage down the old defile. The big 12-wheeler shook in my bed. You can't stay here, the policeman said. You better get born in someplace else. Move along, get along and move along and get along and go. Move, shift.
I was going down the road one day. I'd eight gorger mushers wanting to fight me because I'm a travelling man. I puggered all the gorger mushers. The gabbers had come, grabbed hold of me, kicked the hell out of me, dragged me down the cells and locked me up for protecting myself. And all the gorger mushers have walked off.
Move along, get along, move along, get along and go, move shift.
No way in this world would I report anything. I'd rather get our own family to sort it out. But this place will never do anything like that for us. I guarantee you now, if I went up to police station and said, excuse me, please go and do something about them, they wouldn't even bother picking up a bloody phone. And it's not because they don't believe in what I'm saying, it's because who I am.
Move along, get along, move along, get along and go, move shift.
Never got pulled once, and I'm driving around in a big deer car here, right? Gets in a transit van with a roof rack and stick on, you know, magnet stickers, stop 3 times in a week. They're supposed to be there to help us, supposed to be there to do good for us, and all I've ever had is a load of heartache off them.
Move along, get along and move along and get along and go, move shift.
Police, they know they come down to my side, they know personally, and they'll shake my hand like they would of anybody else and go about their business. No, they're not all the same. You will get others that will come and they just look at you if you've got two heads, if you've just landed down our space or somewhere. There's good and bad within everyone.
In October 2003, the villagers of Firle in East Sussex burnt a caravan filled with pictures of gypsy children while shouting, "Burn the pikies, burn the pikies." The 12 people who organised this were arrested, and travellers across Britain hoped the racism they experienced every day might finally be punished. The case became a symbol of the racism gypsies and travellers have always experienced. But in July 2004, almost a year after the event, it was decided that nobody would be charged, and we were all disappointed. The authorities said the charges were dropped because of a lack of evidence, but most gypsies and travellers thought the decision would have been totally different if the pictures were of black children. To many within our community, the police had let us down again. But if the case confirms one thing, it also hides another, and that is, although we are still let down by the police every day across Britain when they search our vehicles when we travel, and our homes when we've done nothing wrong, like us, they are not all the same. They say they are interested in what we've got to say. Here in Cambridgeshire, home to the biggest concentration of traveller sites in the country, the police say they've changed. They say they now want to protect us from the racism all of us experience. My name is Jake Bowers, and I'm Britain's only Romani journalist. I'll be looking at how we see the police, and what gypsies and travellers across Britain are doing to take them up on that offer. After 500 years of being persecuted and harassed, could it really be time to give them a chance? Right, I'm standing outside Derbyshire Police Headquarters in Ripley, speaking to Siobhan Spencer. Siobhan, is there any such thing as a Kushti Maskra?
Well, I think we've got one working with us today. I mean, John Coxhead's been coming to our group meetings, and he actually approached us and he said there was lots of problems with his young police that were coming in for training. John recognised that you need to go to the community, and we thought, well, you know, you've got to do that. And I mean, it hasn't been easy to do, but it's something that you've got to do. You know, you've got to take people as you find them. And it's like, people very often will put a label, won't they, on gypsy people, travelling people, and say, oh, it's all them people over there. In a way, I suppose we can do that with muskers, gavers, whatever you want to call them. And we shouldn't do that, really. We should take people on an individual basis. And if these people's coming towards you and they're opening the hand of friendship, we've got to try and do the same.
In Derbyshire, at least, gypsies and travellers are getting over 500 years of hostility to improve relations. But could it happen where you live? Everybody is agreed. There's a lot of work to do. In March 2004, I interviewed young travellers across the county of Cambridgeshire as part of a survey about their lives and experiences. One of the things I asked them was about the way they saw the police, and if they would report it when people had been racist towards them. What I found didn't surprise me, and that is that most travellers' experience with the police has only ever been when they are taking action against travellers. Many travellers said the only time they ever saw the police was when they came onto sites looking for stolen goods. Though some young people did have good experiences with the police, these were rare. 68% of them said they had experienced racism or prejudice because they were a traveller. For many, this had been within the school system, though others reported being physically assaulted, having their trailers stoned, or being spat on in public. But not a single person said they had reported an experience of racism to the police. It would be worthless reporting a crime, one boy told me. They would just side with the Gorgias. When I asked them what they would do about racism, many just said, I'd beat them up. So I've come to interview a man who says that isn't the way to deal with racism. He says it's the police's job to deal with racists.
My name's Simon Edens. I'm the Chief Superintendent here in Huntingdon Police Station, responsible as Divisional Commander for Central Division in Cambridgeshire. In my experience, and I've been a police officer for over 23 years, relations with the traveller community, gypsy community, is at an all-time high, really. That doesn't mean it's very high, it just means that compared to where we are, we're much further on. I mean, the reason I'm speaking to you today, Jake, is because I read your report you did about the experience of particularly young people in the traveller community about their experience of hate crime. And actually, as a professional police officer who takes pride in the work that I do and the work my staff do, it horrified me. It horrified me that so many young people are being victimised and yet they don't have the confidence to come forward. And I'm determined to change that. And I think if we look around, my colleagues throughout the service, throughout the police service in England and Wales and beyond, are actually taking great strides to change that. Now, that doesn't mean that we're always going to get it right, because if we look in the past, we've got it wrong. Sometimes we've got it wrong badly. But actually, I think the balance is starting to shift now, and we're getting it right more and more often. And hopefully, young travellers and their families will have that experience and will therefore encourage others to come forward when they're the victims of crime.
68% of young travellers had experienced racist acts, but then when I asked would they report it, 100% of them said no. Why do you think that might be?
I mean, if someone has a bad experience of anyone who provides a service, then they may not necessarily want to come back to them, even when there's nowhere else to turn. What I want to see is everyone that we police experiencing the police in a really positive way. We're not the police for the majority. We're everyone's police. We're the police for the gypsy community as well as for everybody else. I think another reason, perhaps, is that some people may not experience it as racist crime. There is no doubt it is racist crime. Now, I think the responsibility sits on us, on the police service, to actually put out material that lets people know if you've been called an abusive name because you're a traveller, you've been subject to a racist offence. We want to know about it and we want to do something to actually make a difference, both to solve that crime and to stop it happening again.
When I spoke to those people and I said, will you report it? And they said no. I said, well, why not? And their response was, well, the police would just pick it up and throw it in the bin. What would you say to overcome that cynicism?
Well, what I can say, first of all, is that we treat this sort of offending seriously. When someone is the victim of a crime because of the colour of their skin or because of the community they're from, then it's not just that individual that's been the victim, it's the whole community. We want to make sure that that type of offending is dealt with promptly and dealt with professionally, and that's what we've been doing. However, almost as soon as I say that, I also realise that maybe tomorrow, somewhere in the country, a young traveller will take the courage to stand forward and report something to the local police, and the local police, for whatever reason, may not get it right on that occasion. What I'd want to say to travellers is work with us to make it better, because by making it better on this occasion, we're making it better for the next occasion. So this becomes habit, this becomes just the way we do our business, the way we work together.
I said, right, I want your numbers, I want all your caller numbers. No, you don't deserve my caller numbers, sit down and shut up now. And that was it, that's what you get. You try and complain, it didn't happen. So I don't know what you're supposed to do.
If you report something like that to police, it's just a piece of paper, it's written, and when you walk through the door, it's chucked in the nearest dustbin.
So gypsy and traveller people experience acts of racism. They could be called a gypo, pikey, or even worse, you know, beaten or whatever, have their trader's stone. Do you think that they should go and tell the police about it?
Definitely, and I mean, we've had incidences. There's still that reluctance to go to the police, but I think it comes down to some police don't take it as seriously as they should and just don't do it. And we've got to try and build up that and make them be more aware of it.
Well, there you have it. Racism is illegal, and there are laws and the facilities to do something about it. There's a vicious circle, where because nobody is reporting these crimes, nothing is being done about them. Breaking that circle begins with you. If you or anybody you know is a victim of hate crime, report it. The police have a duty to not just prosecute us when we've done something wrong, but protect us when somebody has done something wrong to us. It's time we started making sure they lived up to that duty.
Things are changing, and they're changing for the good. That now police are willing to come and talk to both traveller and gypsy alike. And this is a first for that one. And only from that good can come. And I'm hoping that it will continue. And that would be a win-win situation for all of us. That we would actually, they would get to know us, get to know our culture and tradition. And through that they would know what our needs are. And they wouldn't be coming heavy-handed when they come onto the site.
Because I think unless we start standing up and getting our voices heard, then it's going to carry on. You know, the black people did it, the Asian people did it, everybody else has done it. It's about time we got our rights. It's about time we start saying, we're not taking this, you're being racist, stop it. And if enough of us get up and say it, then they've got to start listening.
Move along, get along, move along, get along, go, move, shit.
Welcome back. The community's view of the police may not have been improved by last week's events in which over 500 police officers descended on sites throughout the area. Two travellers were arrested from Kirkham's Lane site in Wisbeach. Here's what some of the residents had to tell us.
Men with balaclavas, all you could see is their eyes. See so many vans, it was unbelievable, and it was over proportion, you could say, for how many they was getting, two people. They didn't need that many people for, well, whatever they done, they didn't need that many, and they could have put the money to better use, couldn't they?
How many were there?
How many? I couldn't count. To be honest with you, I can't count. I was here on my own and I was fighting myself. So whatever they thought, I don't know.
So you was here alone with your kids?
Children, yeah. On my own. I thought they was going to come in here. I was hiding.
So who did that come for?
Two boys down the bottom. But they know they was going to court the next day, I got told. So why do all this when they could have got them in the police station, couldn't they? It's fret me, to be honest with you. My mum even said, I bet that's fret you. I said, yeah, it did fright me when they was all down there. It did, but I didn't need to do that many. If they knew they was coming in the police station the next day, like, to go on reporting or whatever, they should have took them then, the next day, instead of coming all the way down there and doing what they done. Or if not, they should have just bought two vans, got them, because they know where they live and they know they're always on there. Everyone knows that.
Do you think
I don't think they was.
What effect do you think it has when you can't see it, even see their faces?
Well, it frightens me. I see these white vans go by and all you could see is their eyes. And they had all guns and, well, it's in the paper, isn't it?
Did they come on here? Did they affect anybody on this plot?
Well, yeah, some did come in here. One looked at my brother's car when he was going to work, which is nothing to do with him, what's happening, is it? And he was just going to work, and then the other one wanted to come in here and look at the cars. Which, what's that got to do with them down there? We ain't to do with them because we're on the same place, are we? To be honest with you, I think they're a waste of time. No, I wouldn't spit on them. No, it couldn't have got no much worse.
This is what the man in charge of the operation, Detective Chief Inspector George Barr, had to say.
Operation Arctic is a regional investigation across Norfolk, Suffolk, Essex and Cambridgeshire, investigating armed robberies and ATM ram raids. The investigation started as a joint investigation in January this year after our information and analysis showed that the same people or groups of people were committing those offences right across the region.
What happened the other day?
The other day was a major phase of the operation where we were identifying and arresting a number of people in relation to offences of conspiracy to commit armed robbery and ATM ram raids. As a consequence, we executed a number of warrants and arrested a number of people.
Now, was this an operation that was specifically targeted at gypsy sites, or is it something that happened to different parts of the community?
No, this was an operation that was targeted at organised criminals that have been committing armed robberies and ram raids.
There was an awful lot of people on that site, dressed in kind of uniforms that it wouldn't necessarily kind of aid good community relations. Was it necessary to have so many people going down onto the site dressed in that particular way?
Well, I think the key issue is the issue of public safety first and foremost, also the safety of the people that are to be arrested, and then of course the safety of the officers. What we were dealing with effectively were dangerous people that pose a risk to the public. You know, the people we were seeking to arrest have used firearms, were prepared to use significant levels of violence if required, and what we needed to make sure was that we were able to contain the locations that we were searching, that we were able to expedite our inquiries safely, to make sure that it was safe for the public, to make sure it was safe for the people that we were arresting, and to make it safe for the officers.
Nobody within the gypsy community would disagree with you doing your job arresting criminals, but do you not think that kind of taking that amount of people onto a gypsy site where there's a mix of people doing all kinds of different things, many of whom are law-abiding citizens, that has it has had a negative impact on community relations?
Well, I hope it hasn't, because the vast majority of people from the gypsy community are law-abiding people. What we were targeting was organised criminals. And the reality is that probably the gypsy and travelling community are stigmatised by those small number of people that are committing those offences. And I hope that they will be pleased that the people that are committing those offences have been arrested. Because, as I say, they're stigmatised as a consequence of that, when the majority of those people are law-abiding members of the community.
But there is some slight concern that by taking the media along to an operation, that it is that it has been perceived as an operation against travellers' sites. Why did you take the media in with you, where there was a risk that the public perception would be that the gypsies and travellers are not so much an ethnic minority, but a kind of a criminal underclass?
Well, there are two issues there, and the first is this. The Chief Constable, Mrs. Spence, and everybody else involved in this operation, has made it clear that we're targeting individuals and we're certainly not targeting the gypsy and traveller community. That's clear. Now, Operation Arctic, from its onset, has received a huge amount of publicity. What we were making it clear by telling the media about this particular operation is that we are targeting the people that are responsible for these offences. Now, the reality is that a lot of these offences have had significant impacts upon communities. What we are saying is that the police are dealing with those people that are committing these serious offences effectively. What we're also hoping to do is send out the message to anybody else that's thinking about or is engaging in this type of activity, that if they do, then there's a real risk that they will be arrested for that type of offence.
Now for some music. How Do You Think It Feels? Recorded by Jolene Cunningham.
Next up, the burning question, what do travellers contribute to the area?
Welcome to today's debate. I'm Jolene Cunningham.
And I'm Nathan White, and we are here today to talk about what travellers contribute to the community.
Hi, I'm David Bega. I'm the Travel and Diversity Manager for the Fenland area, and I've been asked to come along today to join in with the debate. I think that travellers are a very active part of our local community and bring a lot of added benefits. If we look originally why travellers come to the area, a number of people are doing a lot of valuable work on agriculture and also dealing with top fruits and soft fruits. And if that work wasn't done, we'd never have built up the area's economy as we have done. I think also some of the things that we need to consider is that today one of the biggest agendas that everybody wants to talk about is recycling. Who were the original recyclers? Who started to get a number of things done that brought this to the fore? And that was Gypsy and Travelling People. So I think we've got a lot to take into account, and that just shows what we can learn from people. Also today I'm aware of a number of Travelling People that work in the education service, the journalists, police, fire and ambulance, hospitals. So they're very full members of the community that actually play a very active part in making sure that people receive health and welfare, working in there for the community and being an active part of that.
So what would you say when somebody was to come to you as a travelling person and say to you about not paying any taxes? You know, the gypsies, they don't pay no taxes, they don't do any good, they don't do this, they don't do that. What would be your response to that?
I think that what you've got to look at, there's a number of people that always want to stereotype people and perpetuate myths, which are wrong. But if you look actually at some of the people who live in our area, they're very active taxpayers. If people need to require welfare benefits, the same as any other sector of the community, they will receive that. But there's a number of people that are actually paying a lot of taxes. If you think of it to begin with, people living in council houses or on sites, they pay rent, they pay money for council tax. When they go and buy any petrol or diesel, they're paying tax there. Anything they buy in the shops, they're paying lots of tax.
That comes up a lot, especially with me. I mean, I really take this to heart because, especially when I get it thrown in my face, that gypsies don't pay taxes. I've been working since I was 16 years old. I've never had a tax rebate in my life. I've paid tax, stamp, all my dues, you name it, I've paid it. And yet you're still getting the fact that some people's ignorance just to say that you don't pay anything. How could we turn it around? What could we do?
I think it's just a question of letting people know. I think in many cases people don't realise somebody is a gypsy or a traveller. They just assume that people they see by the side of the road that might have dropped out of society, they have nothing at all to do with being a cultural gypsy or anything of that nature, and just falling by hard times are automatically gypsies. Again, it's stereotypes. This needs to be addressed in the media.
I think one other thing that the people don't see as well is the amount of people, gypsy people, that died for this country in the war. And you can't make any more of an ultimate sacrifice than dying for your country, and there must have been people around here, as there was from everywhere else, which died for this country during the war. So it's not just now, in the past, people have done all kinds of things.
Yeah, my uncle was fighting during the war. Yeah. He did his bit.
Yeah, my grandmother went into the war. He was in the Boer War.
Yeah.
And he was Ashton's from Boston. That's where he come from. There was a show people from there.
I think also you've only got to look at the Frankham family that live in the local area. I know that Eli Frankham, who sadly passed away, although he wasn't in the war, he was too young, he did national service after the war. And there's been a number of people that have actively served in the armed forces, whether it be in the Army, the Navy and indeed the Air Force. And I know, thinking of Eli, he actually was a middleweight boxing champion in one of the Army regiments, and that was one of his proudest achievements.
Yeah, and another Frankham, John Frankham, was a British boxing champion, middleweight champion. So it's in sports, it's in business, it's in the war, in the forces, all over the place. I mean, there must be a lot of local businesses here that contribute a lot. Traveller-owned businesses that do that.
Again, I think what you've got to look at is travellers are just generally part of our society. Why should anyone be singled out? If you look at this area now, a number of people want to flag up and talk about migrant workers that are coming to the area and try and pull bad comparisons to people that, again, have dropped out of society. Again, migrant workers are picking up jobs that other people don't want to do in exactly the same way as travelling people have done. And if they weren't contributing to our economy in that way, in doing some of the less glamorous jobs that are around but equally needed, there's a number of functions and businesses that just wouldn't operate in this area. And I think that we can see that with a number of new communities moving into this area, everybody has the opportunity to contribute to our society. People should welcome the difference with other people, not try and alienate it through ignorance, and try and learn and celebrate the difference.
But with you being the Traveller Diversity Manager, what are you actually trying to put into print, if you like, to get it, this opinion of yours out there to include the travelling community and to get them accepted a bit, you know, sort of better in today's society?
We've done a number of positive aspects. Some of the things that we have done firstly has been to have traveller awareness training, which has been traveller led, and people have gone out, spoken to people, whether it be in the police force, whether it be in the primary health care, whether it be in local authorities, community or voluntary areas, but also other aspects such as the Women's Institute, and that's an onward going programme of trying to get people to understand.
And that's all we have time for today, so see you later for next time.
Here's Beatrice White with news of the new project looking at racist bullying.
Last year, the Cambridgeshire Traveller Implementation Group commissioned a report about the lives and experiences of young gypsies and travellers in Cambridgeshire. The report, Prejudice and Pride, provided some interesting insights into how young gypsies and travellers viewed school and what they experienced whilst at school. Among many other findings, the report revealed that only 52% of those interviewed of young gypsies said that they went to school. 60% said that they felt their culture was insufficiently valued and defended by schools. 36% had been bullied in school. But perhaps the most dramatic responses came on the issues of racial hatred and bullying. When asked the question, have you ever experienced racism or prejudice because you were a traveller, 68% said yes and 32% said no. Many said that this had been within the school system, though others reported being physically assaulted, having caravans stoned and being spat upon in public. It was clear that the report had highlighted a major problem in the way gypsy and traveller children were being treated in schools, not just in terms of how their ethnicity was celebrated, but also in terms of the level of racist bullying they had to endure. The level of bullying had a direct impact on school attendance and achievement. In April 2005, the Department of Education and Skills backed a new project that would look at the issue of anti-gypsy racist bullying in Cambridgeshire schools to raise awareness of the problem and find solutions to it. Over the next 8 months, schools and gypsy traveller families across Cambridgeshire will be cooperating to produce a CD to inform young people and their families that racially motivated bullying of young gypsies and travellers within schools is a serious issue that must be tackled. It will also raise awareness in schools that such bullying is painful, destructive and wrong, that it is having a major impact on the education and quality of life of young gypsies and travellers, and that it is currently underreported. It will include an honest admission from senior school and local government staff that racist bullying of gypsies and travellers is a serious issue that has dramatic impact on gypsy and traveller young people. It will also include detailed explanation of the ways in which racist bullying can be reported, dealt with and, if necessary, prosecuted. If you or your family have experienced racist bullying in schools, we need your help to make sure this project is a success. We are currently looking for people to participate in this project so that racist bullying in the county is stamped out for good. Are you prepared to take part in an anonymous interview about your experience of bullying within the school system? If you are, please get in touch with Margaret Wood at the Cambridgeshire Race Equality and Diversity Service Team for Travel Education on 01223 508 700.
Romany poet Kathleen Cunningham is from the Fenland area and has written and published two poetry books. Here she recites some of her favourite poems and she gives her opinion on what the word chav really means to gypsies and travellers.
My school days. It's not much fun for a gypsy kid trying to get to school. My dad said, I'll take you in on Monday, but the teacher said, we're full. We had to move on anyway. Never mind, there'll be another day. Next week we try a village school, but the teachers must be blind. Kids can be so horrible to one who's not their kind. Gypsy, gypsy, dirty little gypsy, is what they chant at me. I'm not dirty, I say to them. I'm as clean as I can be. My skin is dark, not dirty, and my hair is naturally curly. My clothes, I'm sure, are cleaner than yours. Dad only bought them on Saturday. I've not had them on before. Next week, another town we try. Never mind, I still get by. I learnt to read, I learnt to write. And if I try with all my might, one day I'll learn to spell. Then I'll sit down with my pen in my hand, and the whole wide world I'll tell. Me and my world. Countryside spread out for miles, as far as the eyes can see. Hills and valleys, dales and dells, meadows and green trees. There is no place that holds me, I wander and I roam, for I am a Romany gypsy with no place to call my own. Yet every road I take is mine, and every step I tread, on God's green earth is mine, and where I lay my head. The cattle in the fields are mine, to gaze on, and the birds in every tree. Each rock and stone on earth I own, for these things they are free. The pleasures that a morning holds down by a mountain stream, the birds they sing the melodies, the river hums the theme. The sun bursts out with great applause after each cloud passes by, and the joy of life lights up the sky as we welcome each new day. The flowers that are in the woods, the smell from them is heaven. The grass, the trees, the sun, the breeze, and all of them God-given. To all on earth, that's you and me and everyone that's living, but somehow only the Romanies know just how to enjoy them. Under the Vado. Under the Vado, over the drum, that's where the cushy shushy will run. Down by the gry and stickety pie, jashing a vree and gelling a kai, the juckle will chase him back to your my, and as quick as a flash the jockey will catch, and he's up with the canis that roost on the ratch. The fortune teller. The gypsy woman and her child came slowly down the road. Basket, bundle, blanket, baby, she is burdened by the load. She stops to sell her lace and pegs, and begs what rags she can. She has to feed and clothe her family, herself and her husband. The baby's blanket, gaudy check, is tied and slung around her neck. The basket is full of pegs and lace. A bundle full of baby clothes is tied around her waist. She chooses her houses carefully, noting all the signs that say this one will be friendly and the lady will be kind. Please buy my pegs, she asks them, my elastic or my lace, or cross my palm with silver, for I see you have a lucky face. Then she will tell their fortune, much to their delight. She tells them things they want to hear, be it wrong or right. Then off she goes, down the road, and slowly out of sight. There's been a lot said just lately about people using this word chav. There's been a lot in the newspapers and about, you know, everyone wants to be a chav and they want to wear their gold and their bling, etc. And we as Romanies have to giggle when we hear the word because we have used it all our lives. To us, a chav is a chavvy. All travelling children are chavs because they're chavvies. They're chavvies from the moment they're born, so they're chavs all their life. They've always wore their gold. I mean, that's traditional. Travelling people always wear a lot of gold. They always have. It's their bank account. They carry it with them wherever they go. But nowadays, yeah, I mean, you see it and you hear it on the news and on the television and in the newspapers, and everybody wants to be a chav. And to us, it's hilarious because we, as I say, we just consider a chav is children. So to us, it's childish.
Finally, next month is Black History Month, but you'll be lucky to see Gypsy and Traveller history mentioned within it. Jake Bowers looks at a new project that aims to change all that.
From Oxford's Gypsy Hill to Worthing's Romany Road, the history of Britain's 300,000 gypsies and travellers is hinted at in place names across the southeast of England. Yet despite being here for at least 500 years, the history and culture of Britain's gypsies and travellers is almost impossible to find within public museums, libraries and archives. If you went into your local museum, library or county record office, it would be difficult to find anything about us,
If we all disappeared tomorrow, it would be difficult to believe that any of us had ever existed. Do you care? Perhaps not. Does it matter? Well, I think it does, and I'll tell you why. We live in an age where gypsies and travellers are the most misunderstood community in Britain. 500 years after our ancestors first arrived in England, we are as hated, feared, and misunderstood as we always were. Hatred comes from fear, and fear is made possible by ignorance. But if the Gorgers have no way of really finding out who we are, or what we've done for this country, then things will never change. And one of the most important places to start that process is in the museums, libraries and archives that can be found in every town. My name is Jake Bowes and I'm a Romani journalist. As a gypsy, I know that my family has been in this country for generations, yet it isn't recognised, let alone remembered. As a journalist, I want to know why we've been left out. During the winter of 2005, I spent 3 months on the road speaking to 100 gypsies and travellers across the southeast about how they thought their history and culture had been represented in the past. I also spoke to gypsies and travellers who had dedicated their lives to preserving gypsy and traveller history. The result of all that work is too detailed to be repeated here, but it is available on the internet at an address you'll find on the cover of this CD. This programme looks at some of the results and some of the opinions of the true experts on gypsy and traveller history, gypsies and travellers themselves. The Road to Your Past research looked at two basic things. The way gypsies and travellers have been served by museums, libraries and archives in the southeast in the past, and the way we would like to be treated in the future. But none of this can be discussed without thinking about gypsy history in England, because it is this very history we need to remember. Ever since gypsies arrived in Britain in the 16th century, we have aroused fear, loathing and occasionally fascination. When Henry VIII sat on the throne, the penalty for simply being a gypsy was execution. The 1554 Egyptians Act forbade gypsies from entering England and imposed the death penalty on those of us who remained in the country for more than a month. In more enlightened times, the death sentence was reduced to transportation. The 1597 Vagrancy Act made it possible for those that will not be reformed of their roguish kind of life to be conveyed to parts beyond the seas. Nowadays, official policy towards Britain's travelling population recommends toleration. Many within our community feel it's time our culture was not just tolerated, but celebrated. Situated in Howlands Lane, Marden, in the heart of the Kent countryside, the South East Romani Museum is in the early stages of development. The museum plans to exhibit Romani culture and life. Visitors can expect to see several traditional wagons, including those of Reading, Burton and Barrel types, two of which require restoration and predate the First World War. Also on display is an assortment of carts and trolleys and large-scale models of Reading and Ledge wagons. Inside their mobile home, Gary, Obi and Frank Brazil have a lot to say about the way their culture has been treated in the past, but it's Frank that does most of the talking. Walking into their home, you get to see gypsy life as it is today, and has always been, but not a thing is preserved in a glass case.
My name's Frank Brazil, and I'm a gypsy from Marden in Kent. It's been our way of life ever since I can remember. We've always messed about with wagons, all gypsy type things, horses, chicken, greyhound dogs. It's just a way of life to us. And now it's time, I think, for other people to see how gypsies do live and how they do carry on, the proper gypsy I'm talking about, not other races. People used to come down here, what was gorgeous or non-gypsies, they used to come down here and say it's like going back in time. Everything we had was old and different things. The old ways we repaired wagons and built wagons was like the old crafts. They said it was like a museum. This is how it originally sort of started. Then we said, well, why not turn it into a museum and show people how we still live, not tarted up or anything like that, but see the proper way our gypsies or our family lives. The museums, what I've seen, when you go around a museum, it's an hands-off experience. You just see it view probably a gypsy wagon from a distance, and that's as far as it goes. You can't touch it, you can't really look into it. In our museum, we want an hands-on experience. People can touch it, they can go up in it, they can sit down in it, they can do what they like to it. And if something breaks, it can be repaired. We repair it so it can be repaired. It's the other museums is a dead museum. We are a living museum for a living culture. They ain't pushed our culture, they've just ignored that we don't exist. I think why it's coming about a bit now because we're getting recognised more, and they've got to recognise us a bit. So what they're starting to do now, you've got the Odd Museum where they're starting to get one gypsy wagon, but they're not displayed properly. They're poked away around the corner. If you walk across it, you bump into it, that sort of thing. It's not properly displayed. No, but I do know of a museum where there's a Romany wagon which belonged to my wife's family. I'd love to have it down there because it's a part of the family. It's a Kentish wagon. When we did go and view it, it was poked around the corner out of the way. It wasn't displayed. There was no name boards to it or what have you. No history to it. And right at the back of it stood a coffin carrier. Well, a coffin carrier standing inside of a wagon is a no-go to us. It's like it's put the mockers on it. The way that they displayed this one, a coffin carrier was right at the back of it with a coffin on it, virtually touching the wagon. It's as if the only good gypsy, this is the way I read it, was a dead gypsy. Well, I'd like to see them collect the truth. If they're going to collect all this information, they want to document it and do it right. But at the same time, they haven't got to use it against the gypsies, the same as the Germans done in the Second World War. If something did go wrong, they would know where every gypsy are, who was their ancestors and things like that. So it's got to be used for the proper purposes. I'd like to see all the big places, probably even like the British Museum, places like that, put on a gypsy exhibition. More gypsy art. They've got art cultures of the world, if you go to the British Museum, everything from over the world. Go and find everything on gypsies. You can't.
And who do you think should make these exhibitions?
The only way you can put on an exhibition, you must have gypsies. It's got to involve the gypsies. So I would say it's got to be the gypsies that put it on. And the Gorgers have got also got to be involved in it as well, obviously. It's like having a trial and a jury with all whites on there and a trial and a black person. So you've got to have a part of his culture sitting on that committee as well.
And it's that idea of gypsies, travellers and Gorgers working together as equals that runs through the recommendations I've put to those who run museums, libraries and archives in the southeast of England. Having travelled a good couple of thousand miles asking gypsies and travellers about how they want their culture to be remembered in the future, I've come to the following conclusions. The long-term social exclusion of gypsies and travellers from British society is an issue that local and central government is hopefully beginning to tackle. But just as government and councils have forgotten to accommodate our homes and ignored our culture, it has also forgotten to accommodate our culture in the places where everybody goes to make sense of the past, museums, libraries and archives. This has forced us to preserve our own heritage, which some of us have done with real dedication. But as we settle down, become more educated and integrated, our cultural traditions are under threat, and the preservation of our heritage is also threatened. Now is the time for museums, libraries and archives to start exploring a hidden culture in its midst that has been a crucial part of British society for 500 years, and this work is urgent. The older people in our community have lived through huge changes in their lives. Some, born into bender tents or horse-drawn wagons, have witnessed the forcible ending of a nomadic way of life that had survived with a language and traditions that can be traced back to India 1,000 years ago. Now living in private and social housing or static council or private sites, they are the only ones that can make sense of our history. But that history is not a uniquely gypsy experience. The settled population also need an opportunity to learn about and interpret this history. Because gypsy history is also an important part of British history. At times it's been a painful and controversial story, but it's still part of our national story. There is an urgent need to go and record and capture gypsy and traveller history from a generation of older gypsies and travellers who have experienced dramatic change in their lifetimes. With every year that passes, more photographs rot and more memories go to the grave. Recording this information before it is too late is an important part of celebrating a forgotten history before it is lost forever. We need to get together to make sure that the days when we are forgotten and ignored soon become a thing of the past.
You go to one county to another, they don't want you. Get back to your own county. You live in your own county where you've been bred and born for years, and they still don't recognise you as a local. So where do you belong? So I think now is the time to come out to say who you are. I think that the Gorgers could benefit from it. If they understand us, then they know how to live with us.
The music at the end there was from a traditional Romany band, the Orchard Family. Thanks for listening. You can listen to it again on the internet at www.thegypsymediacompany.co.uk.
Kept thinking he could not go on with Alice by his side. But then he spent so many nights thinking his projects got me wrong. But I am strong, I know how to get it done. And so he's back from Somerset. He put in all the travelers that he could get. He brought them into helping him to get the program done. And now it's fun. All the jingles were done and the interviews with editing. The paperwork was useless, so we threw it in the bin. He stressed and cursed about his job. Now he got Romy to help him get it done. Help get it done. Go on, Jingle. Get funny. So we can broadcast all our history as we begin to tell our stories and listen. Got something to say to you. Oh yes you do. Oh yes you do. Go on Jacob. Get funny. So we can broadcast all our history as we begin to tell our stories and listen. We got something to say to you. Oh yes you do. Oh yes you do.
This programme was produced by Jolene Rose and Kathleen Cunningham, Nathan and Beatrice White, Didla Neal, Jake Bowers and Carl Hartland, with the help of Mick and Jamie McMurray and the NACRONET Navigator Bus. It was sponsored by AJ Motors of Whisbeach St Mary. It was a Gypsy Media Company production.